Rachel here with the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. I hope you all had an okay Thanksgiving during this weird and challenging year, and that you found some pockets of joy and gratitude for yourself and for your family. We've got a great conversation to share with you today. In this interview, I talk with Sam Nabi, a business owner, urban advocate, and a lot more who lives in Kitchener, Ontario. Sam talks about a process he worked on to transform a downtown street into a pedestrian-friendly public space. This conversation walks you step by step through the journey that Sam and his neighbors undertook to make this happen. He highlights the importance of building coalitions and meeting everyone on their terms, understanding their values and concerns in order to work together to strengthen their city. Sam also discusses the need to choose your battles carefully, to test things out before making permanent change, and to ask for feedback from neighbors at every step along the way. This should be a very educational conversation for anyone who's looking to make streets more welcoming to people on foot and improve public spaces generally in their cities. We know that these sorts of steps create more economically productive communities where local businesses can thrive, where people develop civic pride, and where public resources are put to their best use. So let's hear from Sam on how he collaboratively developed a better street in his town. All right. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. Today's guest is Sam Nabi, who is a musician, urban advocate, researcher, and it sounds like a lot more, based in Kitchener, Ontario. Sam left a voicemail for us a few weeks ago, and that kickstarted this conversation. So, Sam, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
To start, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and let me know if I got all the different aspects of your work and your bio in that list? Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your community.
Yeah, you hit on most of the points. I wouldn't say I'm really a researcher per se. There's a lot of my friends who are in the world of academics and using their research again to advocate for better urban living. I'm thinking of people like Brian Doucette and Robin Mazumder, who are here in Kitchener-Waterloo. I'm not an academic by any means, but I do have some research on my website that I published from a hobby project, but they're not really peer-reviewed or anything like that. But I am, in addition to the things you mentioned, I am a small business owner together with my partner, Julia. We run Full Circle Foods, which is a grocery and bulk store in downtown Kitchener. Kitchener is a mid-sized city of about 250 or 300,000 people. We're in a larger region, which is the region of Waterloo, which is about 500,000 people, metro area. And we have three cities and some rural townships that are all folded into that. So one of the unique things about our region is that we have a very defined boundary between city and country. And the townships are countryside, and they're protected countryside for the most part, and the cities have these growth boundaries. So one of my other advocacy projects is with a group called Hold the Line, and we raise awareness and education about that countryside boundary line. In past years, we've held a festival on a farm to help bring city people out and understand the importance of that boundary so that we can prevent a lot of sprawl from continuing to happen outwards. That's another one of my labors of love, is Hold the Line. And then we always talk about the flip side of protecting the countryside is creating great urban spaces so that people, we do need to keep growing, we do need to keep accepting new neighbors into our city. And one of the ways that we can do that is to build closer together and intensify underused areas like city parking lots and vacant industrial land, former industrial land. That sort of brings us to the project that we're going to talk about today, which is the Gockel Street redevelopment, so to speak. And Gockel Street is a very small two-block street in the middle of downtown Kitchener. Maybe we'll talk about more about how that idea came into being, but right now it's a great, thriving urban space. It's basically a big public patio that people have been using throughout the summer, and we'll be continuing to do it throughout the winter. Just a little bit more of my background. I came to this region 12 years ago now. I keep saying 10 years, and then I realize it's been more than 10 years.
Yeah.
I came here for school. We have the University of Waterloo, and I studied there. I studied urban planning. Before that, I lived in a suburban city on the east side of Toronto called Whitby, very much a bedroom suburb where people live in Whitby and work in Toronto. So I came here for school. And I found a much more cohesive urban life that I love, and I'm happy to make Kitchener my hometown now. So yeah, I've been studying urban planning. I worked for the city of Waterloo a little bit. I worked for the city of Hamilton a little bit. But ultimately, I left the professional planning world to start my own business, which was together with my partner, Julia, operating a retail store in a food desert, basically. Downtown doesn't have a lot of grocery stores, and Full Circle has been around for a long time, and the owners are retiring. And as customers, we really were worried that that shop would leave downtown or that it would go out of business. And then we thought, well, it would be great if we took this on. And that was a conversation we had for many months and ended up deciding to go for it.
Wow. So you've done quite a lot in your life so far. That's an impressive and interesting array of stuff.
Yeah. A little bit of everything is what I'm interested in.
Yeah. I love it. Tell us about this project that came to be on Gockel Street, and what was the journey to doing this, and then, yeah, what happened, and your role as a business owner in that area. How did this all come to be?
Yeah, so Gockel Street, if people are listening and they want to look it up, it's G-A-U-K-E-L. If you look at it on a map, it connects Victoria Park, which is our very beautiful, huge downtown park. Has a big soccer field. It has a historic clock tower that's very much tied to our city's image. It has a little island in the middle of Victoria Park Lake that has bridges that go onto it. It's very picturesque, and it's very well used, especially in the summer. So people come from all over the city to spend time there. And in the last few years, we've noticed that in summertime, it's very crowded. Pretty much every weekend throughout the summer, there's festivals there, not so much in 2020, but in other years, there has been. If we look from Victoria Park towards City Hall, that's basically Gockel Street for two blocks. So it's this connector that is right in the middle of downtown. It is in proximity to really important civic spaces, public spaces. So the square outside City Hall, and then the Victoria Park. And when we have events, like our town has a really big Oktoberfest, we have a really great blues festival in the summertime, we have a winter market, and those events would normally happen at City Hall. Maybe they would extend onto King Street, which is our main street downtown. If events are big enough, they would also spill out onto Gockel and through that space into Victoria Park. So for Blues Fest, for example, you might have one stage at City Hall and one stage at Victoria Park. And when we have these events happening, sometimes Gockel Street gets blocked off to traffic, but it's always very ad hoc. You're sort of in this party mood, and you're wanting to spend time with friends, and you're wanting to enjoy yourself, and you walk from one stage to the next, and it's like you're walking through a construction zone because there's just temporary barricades and kind of impromptu equipment blocking this straight off. And, you know, maybe there's a police officer at the crosswalk directing traffic to help pedestrians cross. And it seems like we put in a lot of effort to make this space a pedestrian space in some ways for festivals, but then the rest of the time, it's just a regular road. So there's definitely, as our city keeps growing, as events keep growing, there's a need to find new spaces for where to hold events and where to hold outdoor markets. And especially during the COVID pandemic in the springtime, a lot of people recognized early on that we need more space outside because the same number of people are going to try to be using Victoria Park, and we need to keep our distance more than ever. So let's find some other spaces for people to enjoy themselves. That really speaks to the necessity of Gockel as a great connector and a great public space. And the other thing is that it's two blocks. It has dead ends at either side. And so it's not actually a really important route for cars to drive through downtown. So this seemed like a really great opportunity, just timing-wise, thinking about the festivals and the cultural aspect of that, thinking about the traffic implications, which there wouldn't be very many serious traffic implications. All of those conversations were happening back in 2019. And this was before, you know, before the pandemic. But of course, the pandemic also highlighted the need for good urban outdoor public spaces. Basically, we got together as a community group, and that involved myself. And I put my business owner hat on. I talked to the BIA, which is our Downtown Business Association, to see if they would support the idea, which they did. I talked to other businesses in the area, including a tech office that is on Gockel Street. So they were all for it. They had previously commissioned a mural on the side of their building. So that's a company called North, and they've just been acquired by Google, actually. So we have a big tech boom in our city, and having those allies on board really helps on the political level, getting some councillors and politicians who are more attuned to our economic development culture and trying to make sure that what's good for culture is good for business. So having those people on board as allies was a really great thing to have. Also, on Gockel Street, there is an arts incubator. So a government-funded arts hub where people can rent studio space and they have lots of different programming. So the people who were involved in that were on board as well. So we're starting to get cooperation from businesses, artists. And then the other piece of the puzzle was the neighborhood association. And what's interesting about Gockel Street is that there's sort of two neighborhood associations that are on either side. One is for downtown and one is for Victoria Park neighborhood. So both of those neighborhood associations got on board as well. And right out of the gate, we were able to present a really unified vision for what we wanted Gockel Street to be. And it was always framed in a really positive way. Like, this is the moment where we can have a quick win. This is the moment where we know that Victoria Park is nearing capacity and we can create some new space for people. Businesses want it. The neighbors want it. Artists want it. And one of the cool things that we did is we put out an informal survey online and also in person, just asking people like what their ideas were. What would you like to see in this space? And when we took a two-block street and said, hey, right now, this is a street where it has sidewalks and some street trees and two lanes of traffic for cars. And what would you put here if you had to design something? And we just kind of let people's ideas run wild. So people thought of community gardens. People thought of a dog walking park. People thought of a little stage for performances. Some people wanted sports facilities like a skate park or a basketball court. And so it was really cool to see neighbors have their ideas run wild with this idea.
Yeah. So then what was next in terms of getting this implemented and getting buy-in from the people in charge?
Yeah, I guess I jumped around a little bit, but I'll take you through a bit more of a chronological order of how things happened. So Gockel Street has one block next to Victoria Park, which is right next to the old bus terminal. That bus terminal has been decommissioned, so that is a huge block that's going to be redeveloped sometime in the future. But right now, it's not being used. So the buses used to use Gockel Street when they were coming in and out. But now that's not being used anymore. There's a lot less traffic on the street. The second block has been under construction for a year and a half. And it's not because the road is being constructed, it's because they're using the space for staging equipment for a condo development that's being built next door. So there's a new building going up on Gockel and Charles Street, and it's going to be a 35-story condo building with some retail on the front, on the ground floor. And they don't have enough space on the lot itself for all their equipment because they're using the entire lot for the building. So they've, I guess, rented the space. And that was really the first spark, is this entire block is being taken out of use because a construction project needs it for a couple of years. And that was a really interesting thing. It made some people a little bit annoyed or a little bit angry to see that happen, just because there's a lot of residents that advocate for change here when it comes to active transportation, when it comes to getting bike lanes installed, when it comes to clearing our sidewalks of snow and trying to get the city to commit to bold action on those fronts. We get some successes and sometimes we don't, but it's always a big conversation that needs to happen. And with this construction project, it seemed like overnight it was just taken out of commission and used for a private project, and the citizens were not really consulted. And so somebody commented online about that and just took a photo of it and said, oh, when we want to close streets to cars, it's a big fight. But when a developer wants to close a street to cars, look, it's so easy. It was kind of a polarizing statement or a harsh analysis of what's happening. But I also looked at that photo and thought, well, it's been going, at that point, it had been going on for maybe 6 months. And I was like, well, I haven't really noticed traffic congestion increasing. I haven't really noticed a lot of inconvenience in terms of cars and loading and deliveries and all the things that people are afraid of when you close a street down. And so I'm like, well, if we can close it down for a construction project, why couldn't we close it down in order to open it back up to people? So that was the spark of the idea. And I just tweeted that out with a photo. And a lot of people really looked at that and thought it was a good idea and added their support in the comments. And again, started to think about these ideas I told you about before with what if we did a dog park? What if we had a performance space? And after a day, maybe it was not even a day, the mayor retweeted it and expressed his support as well. So at that point, when the mayor, and he chimed in with his own idea as well, he wanted to have a big statue, perhaps a statue of a beaver as a public art. That would be great, that the beaver is on our city's crest. And so that's sort of a symbol that he threw out there as something we could incorporate into public art. So it seemed like there was really a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of energy around this. And that was in February 2019, I believe. With the mayor's support on board, I was like, okay, well, if people really like this idea and there's a broad coalition of folks that are excited about this, and it wasn't just the normal people who always talk about urbanism, it was accounts that I hadn't interacted with before. And, you know, I go and look at their profile and it's just someone who is active and someone who's local who has posts about their kids' hockey games and posts about what they had for lunch, and it is not someone who's totally tuned into city politics all the time. So at that point, one of the people in the discussion offered to host a little meeting in the lobby of their apartment building. And there was a group of about 15 of us, citizens, residents, artists, neighborhood association people, myself. And crucially, the mayor came, the city councilor came, and one of the senior transportation staff at the city came. So that was really interesting to show from the beginning that staff and politicians were sort of willing to cooperate and to help shepherd this project forward. That brings us to, I believe, March or April. We're all talking about our ideas. What could this look like? And the staff are being helpful by telling us, you know, in terms of timelines and the plans that are already in place, what can we, you know, how can we help move this through? And what happened is we needed to get this idea into the budget for the next year. That seemed to be the way that we agreed on. You know, there were some of us that wanted to get it done right away for that summer. And unfortunately, things weren't able to move that quickly. However, we got a plan together to pitch funding for this for the next budget. So that happens in the fall. But we wanted to do something. We wanted to do something quickly to keep the momentum going, not wait half a year to have this issue maybe get forgotten about. So one thing that the city of Kitchener has, which is really great, is a neighborhood grant matching program. So if you have an idea that you want to do in your neighborhood, you can get some funding to make it happen. And that's good for hosting events or to do little projects in your neighborhood for street improvements. So it's very resident driven. And yeah, so we got together, we said we want to have a pop-up park. You know, we have this vision of what a park on this road could look like in the future, but let's do a pop-up version of that, have some great programming. And we set a plan for having a pop-up park, I believe, for 4 days in September. And we got tents, we got a stage set up, we got a little theater company come in to do some performances. We set up a basketball net, we set up tables, we had lots of chalk so that people could draw on the road. And we had these like big games, like a big Connect Four game and a big Jenga game that you could play on the street. It was just enough activity to kind of keep people interested and to see, again, like that similar idea I told you about Hold the Line, where we try and bring people out to the countryside to get them to really experience and imagine what it's like and what you're protecting. In this case, we had people use the street and use the roadway in a way that they maybe have never done before. And so while people are walking, again, this is a major connector. So people are just going about their day, walking from the park to the main street, walking from City Hall to home. And a lot of people, you know, use the park as a cut through to get from different neighborhoods to other parts of the city. So not everyone was coming to Gockel Street for this event, but a lot of people were walking by and then would stop for a bit. And maybe they would go get a coffee and bring it back and sit on the patio, the street patio that we had created, and watch the music. Or, you know, we also had some food and coffee donated from local businesses. And everyone that passed by, we tried to get them to fill out a survey. What do you think about what's going on today? Would you like to see this become permanent? And we had about 200 people fill out one of those surveys. 258 people came and told us what they thought. So we heard great responses. So we asked lots of different questions, like what brings you to downtown? 64% of the people said that they lived here. 54% say they shop here. So people could choose multiple answers. 44% said that they worked here. So we got a really strong diversity of people that are like downtown for one reason or another, right? And we asked how they get around. So 91% of people get around downtown in at least in part by walking or by being a pedestrian in some way or another. And then after that, the responses were about the same for cycling, transit, and driving. So cycling, transit, and driving are about equal downtown, but everyone walks at some point. Even if you park your car, you go, you walk somewhere. So this all really helped us make the case to city council that, you know, we need to really increase pedestrian space in downtown. And this is a great connector right next to the park. It connects to City Hall. It could create this like big linked space that could be used for events. That was sort of the pitch. We got together a couple of people to speak in front of the budget meetings after that event. We put a little PowerPoint together. We linked it back to some city policies that have been in place for a long time. Like we have a pedestrian charter where the city has pledged to create walkable communities. We have a new light rail line that has been built in Kitchener-Waterloo, and one of the stops is right next to Gockel Street. So, you know, we want to support active transportation by improving access to that that light rail station. The city had committed to reducing their greenhouse gas emissions recently, pledging an 80% reduction by 2050. So we can take all the angles that we could find and try and link this project back to all these strategic goals that the city has claimed that they want to support. And taking all of those and focusing them on this one stretch of downtown, it's a very small stretch of road, but it's something that could have a huge impact. So that's what we kind of presented. And we cooperated with the city staff as well. There's a whole machinery to budgeting that I think the average citizen doesn't really understand. And I didn't understand until we got started with this, that the budget will be approved in the new year. However, if you don't get your budget issue paper in by September or October, then it's not going to have time to filter up to senior staff, and it's not going to have time to get to the right committee so that it can be in the draft budget, and so on and so on. And so it was really helpful and really important to have some champions on the inside at City Hall to help us like navigate through that process. So that brings us to the end of 2019. Early 2020, we have the vote. So I believe in February, they have the budget vote. And thankfully, it got passed. They actually, what they ended up doing was setting money aside for Gockel Street, but then also setting aside money to do the same thing on Cedar Street, which is a similar type of road on the east end of downtown. And that is, it's a similar situation where it's a side street. Cedar Street kind of goes on for much longer, but it connects the farmer's market with one of the new light rail stops. So that was a neat parallel that they not only decided to do it for Gockel, but they took this idea and said, in future years, we'll do the same thing for Cedar Street.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So then fast forward to this summer, and I'm sure it was used really thoroughly with the pandemic happening. What does it look like now, or what has it been looking like over the past few months?
Yeah, so this summer, we were able to block off the one block of the road because the second one is still being used for construction purposes. But the one block, I think, has proved itself. It is being used day and night. The city installed beautiful, colorful picnic tables along the street, all socially distanced, about 10 feet apart. They put down big planters, and those really help to liven up the space so that it's not just a lot of concrete. But they're also huge planters that actually physically prevent cars from driving down the road, because we want to make sure that that was properly blocked off. And then they strung twinkle lights above. So in the nighttime, it's actually a really amazing space and very photogenic space. In the first few weeks, I saw a lot of young people hanging out there, either getting takeout and hanging out, taking selfies, taking photos of each other with the lights and the colorful picnic tables. And the clock tower of Victoria Park is right in line with this road. So that's a nice background element as well.
That's got to help with the PR and public reception.
Yeah, for the amount of sort of low investment stuff that we put on the road, it actually looks really welcoming, and a lot of people used it. So throughout the day, you might have people in the morning, a lot of people walking their dogs, using the space, having more space to distance and having more space for their dogs to sniff around and hang out. In the lunchtime, you know, people would come over to sit on those picnic tables and be outside for a coffee break or to get some takeout from a nearby restaurant that maybe doesn't have a patio. And then in the evening, a lot of people would just go there to socialize and go there to hang out. So that's how it has been used this summer. Unfortunately, we had bigger plans for it, but due to COVID-19, we couldn't really create big events where lots of people would be gathering. But in a non-COVID world, there would have been lots of festivals. There would have been lots of music. There would have been, performances and public art. And we did end up getting some public art as well. Late in the summer, the city commissioned an Indigenous artist, local Indigenous artist, Luke Swinson, who did a series of illustrations that have to do with local animals. So there's one that's a wolf, and one that's a bear, and one that's a frog. And I don't remember the other ones, but the one that's a bird of some kind. And they're all different colors. They're very playful. They really tie in with the sense of place and the land and the Indigenous ecology that's here. That's just a really important connection that we wanted to make as well. And I'm really happy there was budget for that kind of investment in public art.
So is the thought then that once that condo construction is finished, will you be able to expand the street closure and the public space into that additional block as well?
Yeah, that's the idea. So we don't know exactly when they'll be finished that, but when that happens, at this point, the city staff have been running with it, and it hasn't taken a lot of initiative from the citizens group, from the neighbors group. So we kind of helped get the idea to the budget stage and get it approved. And now the staff that are working on it, the planning and transportation staff, they kind of keep us in the loop. But it's a city project that's funded and that's underway. And they're going to it's a permanent street closure now.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for walking us through that process so thoroughly and all the different pieces that went into making this happen. What advice would you have for others who are looking to do something similar? Maybe it's literally like a similar street closure in their city, or just something else in making public space more welcoming, more pedestrian friendly. What particularly helped you like make this happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's always a lot of different people and institutions that all have their own angle. And if you can find a way to tie whatever you're doing into their goals, that's a really great way to start. So as a business owner, I was able to tap into the business association and say, hey, wouldn't it be great to have this patio for people to hang out and spend more time downtown? Kind of make it hard for people to say no, because I just presented it that way. And they said, you know what? Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And there's some businesses close by that might have concerns about loading. And, we had to definitely talk to some of those people and see what practical issues might come up. There is an apartment building that fronts onto Goggle Street, and their residents were concerned about, what if we need ambulance access to the front door and the street's blocked off? What will happen? And you do have to take those concerns, but not necessarily have an answer for everyone right away, but know what people are worried about and then try and follow up with them and try and address those concerns. So with that one in particular, I talked with transportation staff, and they said, the emergency vehicles could come up on this other street that is also beside the building, and they would just have to walk, around the corner if they were carrying someone out. So, there is still access to the building. It's just not driving right up to the front door. So yeah, things like that. When I approached the neighborhood associations, that was a pretty easy one, because these are people who are very engaged in advocating for more pedestrian and more public amenities in our city. I have friends who are artists. Like you mentioned at the top, I'm a musician myself. So just trying to think about all the different circles that you're connected with and finding a reason for each of them to be interested. So I started talking to some of my musician friends, and I would ask them, wouldn't it be great if there was more space for busking and performance out on Goggle Street? And they were all excited for that. So then I invited them to that first planning meeting. And finally, I'm missing one. Oh yeah, the business community in terms of the more of the office workers and tech workers. So in that one is more of a sense that people want to attract workers that care about a vibrant city, that care about a city with culture, and to invest in that sort of thing. So finding what you want to do, having it be very concrete and explicit idea, and then seeing how that idea can help people meet their existing goals, right? So then by the time we came to the city, we had this coalition of 4 or 5 different parts of our community that was all saying, this is a good idea. And then at that point, if you have some people that are against it, we had already built up a lot of goodwill and a lot of support.
Right, yeah. Well, Sam, thank you so much for sharing this story, for your inspirational tale about this project. I'm definitely going to include links to your website and other stories. Hopefully we can get some pictures in as well so people can visualize this for themselves. And yeah, just thank you for sharing this. I hope it's going to be an inspiration for other people hoping to do some more things in their own communities.
Yeah. Thank you. I have one more thought, which is that public space is also really important as, a political space and a gathering space. And one of the biggest things that happened this summer in our region was that we had a march in support of Black Lives Matter. So this was in June, early June. And of course, it was sparked by news that we had heard from what was going on in the U.S., but also there's instances of police brutality and anti-Black violence here in Canada. Just before that march, there was a woman in Toronto who, Regis Korchinski Paquette, and she was in a mental health crisis. Police were called to her apartment, and she somehow ended up falling from her balcony and dying as a result of that police call. And so all of that anger and frustration culminated in a march, and the organizers of the march decided to start it at Goggle Street, and to gather everyone at Goggle Street to start their march and to have speakers there. And the people, the crowd just gathered there and flowed all the way into the abandoned bus depot and flowed into Victoria Park next door. And so it really showed the power of that public space and like being able to hold so many people and being able to be a focal point for an action like that. So out of that event, we've had continued conversations in our community about defunding the police and reallocating those funds to social services. And I don't think Goggle Street made that happen, but it's important to have those places where people can gather and kind of come together to express their frustration and express their solidarity.
Yeah, absolutely. Another very important use for public spaces like this, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been trying to chronicle some of the details of what's been going on with Goggle Street on goggle.ca. So that website is pretty bare bones, but it has the results of that survey I was talking about and has a little bit of a summary of what's been going on over the last couple of years.
Awesome. Well, we'll share that link with people as well.
Great.
Well, Sam, thank you for your time and thanks for this conversation. It was great to connect with you and be able to share this with the Strong Towns audience.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
All right. Take care. It was great to hear from Sam about his work to make better use of this street in his town and the process he went through to get there alongside his neighbors. Before we close, I want to extend a huge thank you to everyone who joined Strong Towns during our recent Member Week. We've seen time and time again how becoming a member of Strong Towns is a catalyzing step towards taking action in your communities. Thank you to everyone who took that action with us in November. And if you didn't have a chance to join them, you can still do it at strongtowns.org/membership. So as I said at the start of this podcast, I connected with Sam because he sent in a voicemail a couple months ago. I would love to hear from you all in that manner with your voicemails or emails, sharing the actions that you've taken in your communities. They don't have to be as dramatic and long lasting as Sam's project in Kitchener. And I promise I won't make you do a whole podcast with me afterwards. But really, I want to hear what you're up to in your community. So send an email or a voicemail to rachel@strongtowns.org and let me know so we can share it. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time for the next episode of the Bottom Up Revolution.